views expressed on the following live program do not necessarily reflect those of KSCO Radio, its staff, management, or advertisers. If something is said with which you disagree, please call us during the program in order to help us balance comments.
Thursday. The count's doing his shout it thing again. Hi, folks. This is Richard Quigley. In for another Thursday, like to call it United States Freedom Fighter Forum. We do on Thursdays from now to about 1 o'clock. It's come up 18 minutes after the hour. when I was a kid, real young, I was sent home from school one time. I must have been, I'm thinking, I was probably 7, 8 years old. One of the legends in my mind about the nature of my character. I got sent home from school and went in and explained to my mother the reason I'd been sent home from school is because the teacher said I was a fascist. And, of course, my mother just went completely sideways. She just furious, loaded me up and headed down to the school and wanted to know what that was all about. And I walked in there and grabbed the teacher, you know, and she's yelling and screaming and waving her hands. Very unemotional woman, my mother. And as soon as the teacher could get a word in edgewise, she says, no. What, he was being disruptive and facetious was what I said. And I guess it's been a part of my personality trait since I was a kid. Last week when I was talking about the medals and the fact that they're giving away medals for just about everything now so that the honor associated with medals no longer means anything, I discussed it in the context of going to the city council, who, if you folks will remember, put Santa Cruz on the map again nationally by coming out in favor of, they did a resolution that they sent to Washington to start the impeachment of President Bush. And I thought that I'd go approach them, or talk in terms of approaching them to do the same for recalling unwarranted medals. And apparently not everybody got the subtlety. So anyway, no, I don't think it's the city council's job to be recalling medals any more than I do to impeach the president. But it's my way of taking a little jab at them boys. They're pretty funny. And the folks that pay taxes down here in the city of Santa Cruz to those people, I really feel sorry for you. I don't know of any individual human being that wastes money at the level that these cities and counties do. I'm engaged in a, in fact, I'm spending some of your money or getting ready to, and I tried to avoid it, but it looks like it's inevitable. If you remember, I'm not going to couch it that way. The city attorney in Santa Cruz, Barisoni, I think his name is, paid by the hour. Yeah, what a great idea. Really stupid. Got a helmet ticket a while back. Ended up in Judge Barton's court, and we were talking about what we were going to do about it and my need to get a restraining order to make him quit and all that stuff. And he thought maybe I ought to talk to the city attorney, and I mentioned to him in court that would pretty much be a waste of time, that Santa Cruz paid their city attorney by the hour, and that I can't even imagine a scenario where a lawyer paid by the hour would ever want to settle anything. But as I explained to the judge at my next appearance, I'd thought about that, and I was going to go ahead and give his idea a shot. We'll give it a fair shot. So I got a hold of Barisoni, and it drug out for a couple of weeks and two or three phone calls, and it finally came down to, he's going to spend the money. He wants to bill the hours, and so we're going to move forward with that. Now, I've talked to the assistant city manager, I think his name is Martine something or other, and explained to him how stupid this waste of money was going to be, that we didn't need to do this. There were some more fiscally responsible ways to handle our differences. but I haven't heard back from him, and so I'll give him another shot tomorrow. I'll give him a call, and if we can't get it settled that way, then yeah, I'm gonna file some papers, and then the taxpayers of the city of Santa Cruz can just plunk down all that money to pay John Barisone to try to fight for a law that does no protection for you, the citizen. Is all designed to protect the insurance industry. It's at a state level, national level, has nothing to do with Santa Cruz, the county, much less the city, but he's paid by the hour, so there will be no relief. City of Santa Cruz is going to spend a bunch of money. By the way, at the same time, I got a court appearance with Judge Morris over in Watsonville last week, and she wanted to bail on the case. I'm not sure why, but I think I talked her out of it successfully, so that at least one of these helmet tickets that I've gotten is going to be heard in front of a real judge. Like I told her, I would appreciate it if she stayed on the case, because I would like to have one decided by a judge that will actually follow the law. And I happen to believe in that woman following the law. She is just one fine human being. She's an excellent jurist. It's too bad that we can't clone her and start replacing some of these clowns downtown. Speaking of which, our new judge in town, Gray Davis, on his way out, gave us a... I don't even know what to say. I don't even know what to say. That bench down there has just gotten disgraceful. Anyway, not where I wanted to go today, but I just thought I'd pass some of that along to you and clarify what happened last week. For this week's subject, by the way, this is Talk Radio. This is KSCO Santa Cruz. Call in lines 831-479-1080, 477-1340. I'm going to talk about Republicans and Democrats and what the difference is and why people need to start paying attention, which is pretty much what I do every week. Had something come in my email that was sent to me. This is credited as being from a Scottish history professor by the name of Alexander Tyler. Wrote this in 1787, right after the original constitution of our great nation had been adopted. And I don't know whether it was a warning that he sent to us, or it was just a general comment that should have served as a warning. But it reads as follows. A democracy cannot exist as a permanent form of government, he wrote. It can only exist until the voters discover that they can vote themselves largesse, which is generous gifts, from the public treasury. From that moment on, the majority always votes for the candidates promising the most benefits from the public treasury, with the result that a democracy always collapses over loose fiscal policy, which is always followed by a dictatorship. Now, I take exception to the absolutes there, but with the exception of that, yeah, that's the way a democracy works. Two wolves and a sheep sit down and vote as to what's for dinner. And guess who the odd sheep out is. Anyway, he continued, the average age of the world's greatest civilization has been 200 years. These nations have progressed through this sequence. And this sequence is the point that I wanted to make today. I found this sequence important enough that as I have the United States Freedom Fighter webpage as my primary responsibility on the Internet, I maintain the United States Freedom Fighter pages. I put them up there and I maintain them, and I have rarely made any changes. But this particular progression struck me as important enough that this week I went up there and made the changes, and I brought it in to talk to you. So the average age of the world's greatest civilizations has been 200 years. These nations have progressed through this sequence, from bondage to spiritual faith, from spiritual faith to great courage, from great courage to liberty, from liberty to abundance, from abundance to complacency, from complacency to apathy, from apathy to dependence, and from dependence back into bondage. I'll run that by you again, because the formation of democracy undoubtedly is the rise out of bondage. And the the sequence is from bondage to spiritual faith. You know, the belief in God. With God's help, we can establish a free society. All that God stuff that everybody wants to dismiss today, we're way down the sequence from the day of coming from bondage through spiritual faith. But from the spiritual faith, we got great courage. And if there's any question in your mind as whether or not the people that fought for our original liberty in this nation were courageous, you need to go back to, school. They don't teach it there anymore, I don't think, but you can certainly go back to the books. And from great courage to liberty, that's the story of the United States. From liberty to abundance. And, did we have it. And, I mean, the beauty of the period between 1776 and the early 1900s, I don't know that there's ever been a time in the history of the world where there was such abundance in the hands of the people, where the people actually benefited so much from their liberty as there was in the original 100, 150 years of this nation. And then, of course, from abundance to complacency. And I think the complacency was enabled in our case, in this country, by the Industrial Revolution first, and, of course, the Electronic Revolution next. And from complacency to apathy, you can certainly see how that could happen, if not within one generation, and certainly from one generation to the next. From apathy to dependence, when you go back and you talk about, as soon as the people figure out that they can vote these benefits from the public treasury to themselves in a democracy, you easily get to dependence. And, of course, the government is always against freedom. The government exists as a ruling force, so freedom is the enemy of government and vice versa. Government will always be against freedom. And even ours, it's structured to be otherwise, but it has no choice. It is the nature of government to be against freedom. So they build this on apathy. They build us into dependence, and then from dependence back into bondage. And in reviewing the sequence, I've tried to point out to people that this isn't a straight line, so that every group and every group and every sect of our society is experiencing the same stage of the sequence at the same time as everyone else. There are a lot of people in this country who have dependent themselves, becoming dependent on the government handouts, into virtual bondage already. So they're already there. You have those that are apathy, and we talked about that in the election. I think the largest number of people in this country are locked in the stages of sequence that move from complacency to apathy and from apathy to dependence. So there's large elements of our society that are locked up in there. I happen to be in that group of people that sees myself in this sequence as the bondage to spiritual faith. So I'm completely, personally, out of whack with, I think, the trend of the nation. But that is an irreversible sequence, and I look at that, and this was written about the fall of the Athenian Republic over 2,000 years before the United States established our republic. And when I look at the names, Republican and Democrat, I start to think that the root word in either is pretty much as we see it, I guess, to some degree today. It certainly reflects my Republican views. Do tend to support the Republic and the notion of the Republic, because that's the only protection we have against the direction that a democracy will take. And, of course, I see the Democrats and the Democratic Party as being very much of those folks that they want to elect people that want to give them stuff. It has been the promise of Democrats to give stuff away, which is probably the hugest part of the downfall. It is the failure of the retention to the ethics and goals of a republic that has allowed us to get this far away from the original intent of the founders. And One day we'll spend some time talking about the founders and what they knew that we don't, and why they knew it, how they found out. But in the meantime, Santa Cruz Mike's on line one, and on a beautiful day like today, I can't imagine what anybody that doesn't have to be involved in radio is doing with radio. Mike, what are you doing, Dave?
Hey, I'm at work, but I'm stopping for a few minutes because I wanted to catch your show today.
Okay, well, I thought you'd looked outside. I can't imagine. I really, really, really would rather be riding a motorcycle, know what I mean?
Well, hey, I tell you, I'm down here in Scotts Valley. It's beautiful. Hey, I had a couple of things. I was sitting in Highwoods today getting my hair cut, and I was thinking about your show last week when Rosemary came in with that breathtaking news event about Rush Limbaugh caught and all these narcotics and everything. Can I ask you something? Was she drooling or kind of smiling when she was reading that report?
Well, I'm going to tell you something. She may have been when she read it, but I don't think it was necessarily on my show. I don't recall it being on my show.
Yeah, I think it was.
Oh, okay.
It was.
She's over there tapping on the keys right now. She's going to tell you who it was. Here it comes. It was. Oh, is that Robbie the gun guy?
Oh, okay.
All right, but that means you're listening 2 days a week, and that's good.
That's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah.
Hey, you know, the hardest thing is just to remember during lunch, you know, to put the radio on or whatever. Hey, I want to talk about that Democratic thing, you know, whatever.
Sure.
You know what I think? Like, I agree with you what you just said about the fall of a nation, and we've seen it over and over, but I think there's something even bigger than that. I'm not talking about God or religion. I want to talk about something a little bit different.
Okay.
You know what? Our country was never supposed to be a democracy. It was never a mob rule.
No, it is a democratic republic. It was established as a democratic republic.
That's right. And there's a huge difference between what it was established and what we are now.
That was the point I was making while I had you on hold, so you might have missed that. But, yeah, that's exactly what's happened is we've taken our eyes off the principle of the foundation and allowed the democracy advocates to move forward with the gifts from the public treasury to steal away, and it's been the courts that have allowed it to happen. It's been our elected officials that have allowed it to happen, and quite frankly, it's been the silent majority is what we were called in years past. But it's been you and me, my friend. We have not been attentive.
Well, let me tell you why, Richard. It's because it happened so slow. It started with Roosevelt.
Yes, sir.
I mean, he did some good things, and, you know, I don't want to, you know, belittle him, and he helped in a lot of ways. But the truth of the matter is, it's taken a long time, so it kind of snuck up on me and you. We didn't know about it until we're kind of about an age now. It takes a little bit harder and a little bit more effort to do something about it.
Well, actually, you know, if you think about it, Mike, don't you think the first big lick of the Republic, I mean, to the Republic itself, came in under Lincoln?
Well, yeah, don't get me in the Civil War thing, okay?
Well, I'm not going to get you in the Civil War thing, but I am going to point out to you that the essence of a republic is housed in states' rights.
That's right.
And there's no question that...
Well, you know, that's a whole complicated thing. As an example, the Emancipation Proclamation, that only freed the slaves in the Confederacy states, not in the northern states, which still had slavery as illegal. You know what I mean? There's lots of political things that went on that Abraham Lincoln used for this war. So I don't want to get into that because it makes me mad. But, you know, here's what I think about the Democrats,
yeah.
Okay? I was born and raised in the South.
Yeah.
What that means is that for 100 years, the Democratic Party ran the South, made it and kept it racist and ignorant and backwards. When the Republicans come in there and said, okay, we have to have equal rights for everyone, that's when the South started getting better. When the Republicans came down there, good or bad, when they came out and said, you know what, we need to have manufacturing down there, that's when the South started getting better.
Yes. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And that is one of the things that I'm glad you brought that up. That was one of the things I wanted to hit on today, the difference between Republicans and Democrats and how they approach. Let me get off onto that, Bear, and let you get back to work, Mike.
Hey, have a good one, Richard.
Oh, yeah. You're
turning for your thoughts, all right?
Okay. Checks in the mail. Thanks. Yeah, I was talking to some young people down at the coffee shop, which is one of the things I do. I think that along with the list of things that we have to be aware of as adults is our responsibility to the future of our community and our society and our home. And so I go down and I visit with these young people, and their ideals are so high. When you're young and and you haven't had any life experience to speak of, and you're mostly just watching and listening, especially when you're growing up in Santa Cruz, where this left-wing giveaway stuff is so prevalent. The idea of taxing the rich, discouraging business. The thing that's wrong in my mind with the liberal point of view, the tax the rich, feed the poor point of view, that whole socialist bent, is that having read more than one book in my life on my travels, I stumbled into one called On Human Behavior, B.F. Skinner, behavioral psychologist, 500-page book. I mean, some pretty tedious reading, very technical stuff. He was a guy that used to train pigeons to peck at certain colors and junk like that. And I understand he put his kids in the nut house going home and experimenting with them. But the bottom line of this whole book is that behavior that is rewarded will be repeated. That is the nature of man. Behavior that is discouraged, not just man, but sentient everything. I mean, even relative animals, everything. Behavior that is rewarded will be repeated. Behavior that is discouraged will go away. Now, that's like gravity. That's just a rule of human behavior, and you can argue about it till you tip over it. I don't think it's a theory. It's way past a theory. It's just you look around you. It's the way things work. Well, the Democrats would have us tax the rich, punish the rich, punish the successful. I hear big business, beat big business. Everybody's down on big business. Everybody wants to restrict big business, take money from big business, take power from big business. Big business is nothing more than people that are good with money. And if you take money away from people that are good with money, big business makes jobs for people. They provide the motivation for improvement in our lives. I mean, big money creates to sell. That is their whole function. So they're creating jobs. They're creating wealth. They're creating gross national product. All the things that make a better life for people possible. If you punish them for that effort, if people are punished for being successful, then I do not see the benefit in that, but it in fact discourages it, and it will go away. On the other hand, the liberals will have you feed the failures, feed the poor. If someone does not produce, what you do is you punish the guy that will produce, and you give the benefit of his efforts to the guy that will not produce. Now what you've done is that you have provided a benefit to someone for not producing. So you're not only discouraging growth and productivity on the one end, but you are encouraging an anchor on the whole thing on the other, encouraging people to sit on their butts. And, of course, what that does is create in our little cycle of things that dependence, and that dependence leads back into bondage, and the left would have us there. I think the left would be very happy in a dictatorship. I think as long as that dictator were willing to feed the poor. I've had Nick hanging on for a minute from Royal Oak, and he's got something on democracy, and we'll see if it fits in with what we're doing with here. Nick, how are you? Welcome to KSCO.
Nice of listening. One thing saying, you're as good as your money. And I would like to see the money, we seem to be losing our business. Because there was an advantage in as a takeover, and now we're digitally fine.
Okay, you're gonna get that together, Nick, and I hope you give us a call back when you get your thoughts sorted out. But I think I was picking up on what you were saying. When I talk about the things I do, I don't talk about them in absolutes. I generalize because within the world of generalities, you don't get tied down with what the liberals try to do. The liberals will always run to the weak exception of an argument and pin you down over there so that you can't move in general terms. The world functions in generalities. And so can you take exception to any word, sentence, line, idea that I put out there and tear them apart? Yeah, and there's no way that I'm going to be able to hold myself up against that, or anybody else for that matter. But that the principles don't change. The principles, behavior that is rewarded will be repeated, never changes. That stays. It's just a part of our nature. It's a part of our character. And there's nothing we can do about it, even if we wanted to. You know, I've talked long enough that we've had time for a commercial, and I haven't made one. Why don't we do that, and I'll be back in just a minute. Okay, so we're talking about the sequence of the failure of the greatest world's greatest civilizations, from bondage to spiritual faith, from spiritual faith to great courage, from great courage to liberty, from liberty to abundance, from abundance to complacency, from complacency to apathy, from apathy to dependence, from dependence back into bondage. Think about where you're at in that loop. Think about where we're at in that loop. And decide what you want to do, if anything, about it. I'm not saying anybody should do anything. I'm just saying that best of the future you want for your kids, you know. I'd like my kids to have everything I have, but it seems to me like we're on the back side of this sequence. And I don't know how we're going to be able to put that together. Gary's over in Live Oak and has something to say about a government transition team. You've been paying attention, haven't you, Gary?
I'll tell you, there's a whole bunch of them. I'll handle two of them here right now. One is Mario Rodriguez, and he's part of the transition team. He's a Republican from Orange County, and I look up on the internet here, and he was a special assistant to the LULAC president from 1986 to 94. From 92 to 96, he was a campaign manager for the National LULAC president. I think it's important Republicans understand that LULAC supports affirmative action. They want to expedite millions of citizenship applications. I'm reading right from their 73rd convention in Houston. They oppose vouchers. They support bilingual education, increased funding for emergency rooms. LULAC, get this one, LULAC opposes citizenship requirements for airport screeners and other security personnel.
You're talking about Schwarzenegger government transition, too, aren't you?
Exactly.
Okay.
This is Mario Rodriguez, part of the, you know, part of the team.
I understand. The one thing that I caught from Savage, and I absolutely agree on, if you noticed the night of Arnold's acceptance speech, how many prominent Republicans do you remember seeing on that platform with him?
They're all Kennedys. In fact, Maria Shriver's father was Sergeant Shriver's member of the Council on Foreign Relations.
Well, these things that you're talking about then should not come as any surprise. And those moderate Republicans, that brought Arnold in, I'm prepared. I'm prepared to give the man the chance. Let's go. Let's let him have his head. He's going to have his head anyway. Let's see what he can do as a moderate Republican. But yeah, there's no secret. He's going to be bringing a whole bunch of the very type of people you're talking about. Who's the other one that you had on that team?
Check out this one. This guy's the head of Western Growers, and on his biography it says here he's also the protege of Alexander Roosevelt, right out of the White House and all this other type of stuff. You know, real Democrat.
Right.
And he says he received the Ellis Island Medal of Honor. Now get this. This is an outfit that includes MALDAC, LULAC, A. Philip Randolph, the Black Caucus Foundation, the South Western Registration Project, which just had Dennis Kucinich there as the last speaker, and on September 11th, they issued a press release congratulating Gray Davis on the providing driver's licenses to the illegals, and I've got the press conference telephone number contact if nobody believes this stuff.
Well, these
are the guys.
I know, Gary, and I'm with you. I'm a little concerned about who he's picking and who he's running with, but I have made it in my own mind. I have made it in my own mind best for me, and I think for the general politic, for me to kind of light up. I'm gonna keep an eye on this guy, but I'm gonna see what happens in the next 6 to 9 months. There's gonna be a honeymoon period here, but this guy Arnold is not the kind of Republican that I am, and the party has decided to back him. I asked the question of their former chairman, you know, where do I go? Where do guys like me and And Tom McClintock, go now. That the Republican Party has this new...
Arnold and his friends have given the green light for Gray Davis to do all the dirty stuff to pay off all the people with all the logs that are going through right now, and Arnold's as quiet as can be.
No, he hasn't yet. I got to differ with you there, Gary. He's asked him not to do that. He's asked him not to appoint any more hacks for judges. He's asked him to respect the fact that the people don't want his appointments, opinions, and laws anymore, and Gray Davis is ignoring him. And there's really nothing he could do about it either now or later.
I believe he could. He could go after all the Democrats that are passing these laws rather than doing this little folded hands thing with the governor. He could say, okay, Democratic assemblymen and state senators are passing this. We're coming after you, too.
I think you and I need to be doing a bunch of that. And I think we need to be watching real close where our guy here is going on our people from here are going on this stuff. And come March, when we get a chance to cast another vote for some of this stuff, let's get it on.
Okay, I'll give you a couple more atrocities next week.
Okay, thank you very much, Gary.
Bye-bye.
I am into giving Arnold. Just let him, he talked the talk, and now let's let him walk the walk. And I kind of chuckle because the guys within the motorcycling rights community, I gave them that I told you so before Arnold stepped up. Or when he first stepped up, I said, you better find out where this boy stands on the helmet law, because I don't think he's a Republican. You think he is. Traditionally, the Democrats have been the ones that have favored mandatory helmet laws in California, and Republicans have been the only ones against. And I tried to explain to him that it doesn't matter that he doesn't wear these helmets in his movies. He also uses guns in his movies, and he considers that movies. And I'm looking on this screen and can't believe it. If this is Margaret, this might be the best day of the week. Margaret, how are you today?
Hi.
Haven't talked to you in forever. This is Margaret, right?
Yes, it is.
Hi there.
Hi there. Hey, what are your comments? I'd like to share comments with you on that euthanasia attempt by the culture of death courts and the husband of that woman in Florida.
Interesting question. What's yours?
Well, I just feel that, we certainly don't starve animals in shelters like dogs, cats, lions, tigers, fishes, or horses. We don't starve them to death, and we don't starve death row execution, people on death row for an execution in this country. We never starve those people to death. So I find it unconscionable what these courts and this husband are trying to do.
Well, but Margaret, that's one of those areas where I find myself siding with you to some degree. And I think if we both knew everything that there was to know about that, that we could develop a certain passion about our position. But to have position about certain principles is certainly justified, and it does bring the issue up. I mean, it does bring the issue of how do we feel about the whole idea of euthanasia.
Of course, infanticide.
If the woman's husband is not being misleading, and I know there's a lot of discussion out there that he's got a new girlfriend and that she's going to have a baby. And
a couple kids, $700.
Yeah, he needs to clear this whole deal.
$700,000 in life insurance,
yeah,
money.
Yeah, I know, and I'm looking at that, but setting all that, because we don't know about that either. We only know what we're hearing, and as you know, Margaret, you're an intelligent woman. You know you can only believe so much of what you hear, even here. And I do the best I can, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But if all that is true, that would really be sad. But the how it is being handled, the starvation part, if in fact the physicians that say that this woman is completely brain dead, that she is completely out of touch with everything that's going on around her, that she would have no sensation of hunger or thirst. It would simply be a matter that the nourishment would cease and the body would pass. Then I'm not sure that I have a terrible problem with it. But I'm also of a mind that we don't know enough about how the mind works. So that is a... You bring a question to the table that I think is good for our audience because it gets them thinking about those things.
Right.
But to make a judgment about what this particular case is, I just don't think that you or I are going to be allowed to have the information that we would need to make a right decision on that. My impulses are pretty straightforward in a lot of regards. One of them, when you talk about guys that are sentenced to death. I'm amused by the fact that when they give somebody a shot, the lethal injection, they used alcohol to clean the spot for the needle before they, you know.
In case there's infection.
Yeah, absolutely. That, those kind of things bother my mind. I've also long been an advocate of cyanide pills in prison. I think that the savings to taxpayers just by putting a cyanide pill in the cell with these guys on death row, if they wanted to save the state the money and the hassle of taking them out, rational suicide. I've long been an advocate of rational suicide, regardless of in or out of jail. I just think if people think they've had enough of it and they're ready, there ought to be a place there they can go and just walk in and boom, it's all taken care of and they're gone.
Well, it just feels really, really creepy to me that it's so
it's
obvious.
It's starvation.
It's obvious that this is truly becoming, it's going to be known as, it is being touted as the culture of death. And I have a taped recorded interview with Barbara Boxer, Senator Barbara Boxer, and Senator from Pennsylvania, where Barbara Boxer declares that if a baby's toe is inside the woman's body, it can be killed. And since the Iraq War, 30,000 partial birth abortions of viable humans at the age of 6 to 9 months along in the womb have been murdered in this country. And yet, you know, the people against the war are saying, oh, there's been, 70, 80 soldiers been killed? But what about the 30,000 partial birth abortions that have occurred since the war started?
It's one of those, it's too bad that there's not a woman like yourself who has taken a time slot at this station and been able to deal with these, because I got to tell you, there's something really inappropriate about a guy sitting around talking about his views on abortion. Yeah, you know what I mean?
I'd love to.
I mean, I don't know that it's inappropriate. It just feels odd to me. I have long kept myself directly out of it. I think I stated my views on abortion at least once or twice here, and haven't got the appropriate responses, so I'm not going to do it for you again. But I hear what you said, Margaret, and as far as this woman in Florida goes, you know, God bless her. I hope that there is no pain or torture involved. I wondered why, when she reached the stage that they were going to do this, why they didn't just transport Avorkian down there and have him take care of it, because he seems to...
Well, the parents want her to remain as she is.
Well,
she responds to them.
I understand.
Loves her.
But there is a... The husband's argument is that her wishes would have been not to be kept alive by this. And he's defending her arguments. And I don't know what your closeness is to your significant other, but significant others do have a deep attachment, you know, in communication that sometimes they won't share with their parents.
Yeah, so, she doesn't have power of durable attorney with her husband, so he really can't do it. He had to go all the way to the courts with
him. Well, I understand, but he does have that inside track on what actually was on the woman's mind before she couldn't speak for herself anymore.
Yeah, pillow talk, you know.
Let me see. Oh, caller wants Margaret to give her source on the amount of partial abortions, please. Okay, the partial abortion statistic that you gave?
Yeah, well, there are 5,000 a month that there is no government mandatory reporting on the abortion statistics, but this is just the numbers that they are it's a calculated thing.
Yeah,
well, there are 6 medical doctors at the Santa Cruz Medical Center that do partial abortions. I have their names.
I'm about out of town, but about out of time. But I do want to know that the source on this information would be.
No, I'm sorry. I can get it for you.
Not a problem.
Before you call you in next week.
Yeah, and Margaret, okay. one thing, be aware of it. Our listeners on this show are real sharp. And when we come in with numbers, they generally want to know where they come from.
Good.
So if we can do that, it helps save some confusion down on that end. I'm not challenging the numbers, and I don't think the caller is. I think it's just a matter of finding out who did the statistics gathering. And that makes sense to me. Listen, thanks a lot for calling, dear. I'm glad we got through this one without any shudging. I'll talk to you later.
You too.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was fun. Yeah, okay. We're about running down here. We got a couple minutes to go. I was going to do some stuff about the future of this county, and next week I am going to talk about that. I'm going to take it on. We're going to talk about how we get the rent situation straightened around here to where people can afford to live here. I've harped on that before. Between now and March, because there are some elections coming up, not the least of which is for your Board of Supervisors, I was going to run. I have since decided not to run for the supervisor for my district. There is a man down there named Peter Truman that I will probably be touting pretty heavily. Good man, probably the best, the dominant reason why I elected not to run for supervisor. But I don't know that he necessarily agrees with me, but that doesn't matter. It is what the people of this county agree with relative to how we fix our housing problem in this county. My belief is that the number one problem facing this county into our future is the high cost of housing. It is just absolutely stifling business. It is stifling our cash flow. It is messing with our society as a whole. It is messing with our education, our schools. It is interfering with virtually every aspect of our lives, all of our services, everything. It is the single most important issue in my mind in this county, and coming into this next election, I think it should be one that should be just discussed and discussed and discussed. And yes, I think the decision made about who you're going to vote for should be in that area. Speaking of me, this is Richard Quigley. I'm done for another day. KSCO, Santa Cruz, California. Enjoy doing the show. Thank you.